On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, it only took 29 episodes, but we finally found a guest that agrees with Soto. Sanjeet T stops by to discuss Julio Jones, the offensive line, and Derek Carr. Specifically, I dove deep into Derek Carr's next-gen stats, and what should we all learn from the Lynn Bowden Jr. he said, she said drama. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ and Soto here.
Hello.
We've reached a threshold.
Uh-oh, what's that?
This is how serious I am into this podcast now.
Oh, no. What's going
on? When I go to my browser and I put in the letter P and the letter O, you know how it fills in what the rest of the URL is?
Normally, like everyone else would be Pornhub.
It's now Podbean, the hosting site for our website. It has, I've come onto this website. I've come onto my computer, not C-O-M-E, computer. Yeah. So many times for the podcast, I've done it more times than I have for porn. If that's not a sign of how dedicated I am to this show, I don't know what is.
Let me see your porno phone.
Now, the phone is a different story, right? That's private. It is a separate entity.
Separate entity.
It is so burned into the fiber of the mainframe and hardware of my computer that it's never going to be able to get pulled out. But on my computer, on my home office computer, the website has overtaken porn. That's how big this is.
That's impressive. I'm not going to lie. That's very impressive.
Yeah.
I have an old cell phone that I just hook up to Wi-Fi. That's my porno phone. Mm-hmm. I don't watch porn on anything else.
Really?
Nope.
Why not?
Just the porn phone. Nope, that's it.
I got my phone. I got my laptop. I probably got VHS tape somewhere deep in my closet.
Yeah.
I need to run at all times.
I can't.
Yeah, you're weird.
Well, it can't consume my life, man.
Spread your wings away. Spread my seed, Soto.
Fucking throw up.
All right. Well, speaking of wide receiver porn, Julio Jones is still out there on the market. So last week when we did our show, like the news broke like basically right as we recorded. So we didn't really touch
sink
it.
In yet. You weren't sinking yet.
And I thought, okay, this will probably be figured out by the time he's done. But no. Julio Jones still now out in the open market. We're recording this on June 2nd. As of June 1st, it's the end of a specific fiscal time for players where if he was going to get moved, it's going to be after June 1st anyway because of cap reasons. It's very long and complicated, but Atlanta can save money by not moving him until June, right?
After June 1st, yeah.
After June 1st, which is where we're at right now, and he's still currently available. And basically the way it is with any quarterback – or skill player that's available, the Raiders seem to be thrust into the discussion as a possible suitor because everyone looks at John Gruden as this mad scientist. And he's just going to throw guys around and he's going to grab whoever, you know, money, age.
I just think it's more of a star power thing. I just don't think the rest of the league or the rest of the, you know, analysts out there just feel that the Raiders have this star power that a franchise fitting of the Raiders should have. I just don't think they feel that we have it.
They think Gruden's a star fucker.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about the main franchises, like even you could argue who's better or who isn't, but people, I mean, the Cowboys have more star power with their big three than our big three.
Yeah. But
you know, and that's a fairly close comparison offensively.
I don't think that – see, this is a very big, like, media and fan mentality of, like, star power. It's like, oh, I know this guy's name or this guy's fantasy stats or this guy's jersey sells so well. Like, I don't think that's as big of a part of like GMs and coaches. Owners, yes, because they're thinking, I got to sell season tickets. I want to sell jerseys. Like owners think that way. Team presidents think that way. Marketing thinks that way. There's no way Gruden and Mayock think that way. Not a chance. Like they got, you know, they have their strengths and their faults. They're not one of the kind of guys that are just like, oh man, like just think of how long the autograph line is going to be for Julio Jones during training camp. Like that's not on their mind at all. But you can't help but assume that John Gruden, again, in his, you know, mad scientist lab is thinking, shit, man, throwing deep to Julio Jones. Like he's like mindsturbating to so many plays he would design for like this beast, a top five wide receiver for the last 8 years.
Well, yeah, it's the problem that I'm seeing here is I think that a lot of Raider fans out there and a lot of analysts are looking at the whole Antonio Brown debacle and kind of have that PTSD. The thing is it's a completely different situation. Antonio Brown was a cancer with Pittsburgh, and it wasn't really a secret. Mm-hmm. He was a cancer in that locker room for years.
Yeah.
Mike Tomlin is probably, God bless you, Mike Tomlin, wherever you are, for having to deal with that shit. And then you have Raplesberger just freaking throwing his dick in everyone's face. It's like, come on, man. That's a rough locker room.
No wonder Tomlin always looked pissed. Like, he's always just dealing with something like, you didn't have to.
Fucking guys. But yeah, man, I it's not the same thing. For all accounts, Julio is a freaking, you know, just a regular dude. Yep. He likes to go out there and play. He doesn't have any off the field issues that I can remember. He just wants to get paid, or he wants to go into a situation where they're looking to win now, not, you know, oh, well, we have Calvin Ridley. We have other guys that we can move forward with. We don't necessarily need him. We need the cap space more than we need him, basically, is where the Atlanta is right now.
Well, and this is what it comes down to. All 32 teams in the NFL would want Julio Jones on their roster. It's who can afford him.
For the right price, yeah.
For the right price, right? What are you willing to give up in a trade to Atlanta, and what are you willing to pay him? He's due about $15 million next season. His contract gets pretty easy after that. You could cut him without losing too much. But also reports are that he's going to want to restructure contract when and if he gets traded. So that's another part of it.
Which works well for whoever takes him, because they can restructure that deal where it's not so much of a cap hit every year.
Yep.
They can structure it into bonuses and workout stuff and all kinds of crazy stuff. There are freaking wizards out there with this cap shit. But yeah, man, I mean, look, you know how I feel. I want players, right? Mm-hmm. And it's great. Ruggs, you're going to be a superstar, or you can be a superstar, or it's 70% chance you're going to be a superstar or whatever. Well, he's already a superstar. And you've talked about, oh, well, he's 32 years old or this and that.
Coming off an injury. Guys,
just get the best players you can on your team now, because what happened in 2017 after 2016? That was the window. The windows, they close mighty quick in the NFL. So you always see half the teams don't make the playoffs 2 years in a row. So you got to get it when you can.
So, yeah, I think the issues with Julio Jones are obvious, right? 32 years old, coming off an injured season.
Huge paycheck.
And he's such a – and you're going to have to trade something for him. I think the news coming out, getting leaked, that it was Atlanta has a first-rounder on the table available. I don't buy that. That's Atlanta leaking stuff to try to raise the price of Julio Jones. I think it's second-round pick and something else. If it's a first-round offer, then they're also – okay, maybe there is a first round pick offered to Atlanta, but they're like, okay, you got to pick up some of the price tag.
Yeah, that's
first round pick. Yeah. You pay half his salary. And then plus you give us a third, right? Like there's.
Yeah, it's always something in return.
Yeah, you could trade a first, but you're not. It's not just a cut and dry deal.
Straight up swap. Yeah. Honestly, even a second. Second's just as good as a fuck. We saw it this year. Look who we got in the second round. Who everyone was saying was going to go on the first. So there's a big group. There's like, you know, I mean, Kyle Cochran said it. There's the top 10, and then there's the next 40 players. And those are interchangeable depending on team need, on the position, on who moves up to what, who you're afraid is going to take them behind you. And those next 40 players are second half of the first round, second round guys. So it's all a big mesh. So if you want to give up a second round pick, for Julio Jones and that price tag, that's going to be kind of rough. And I think that's what Atlanta's running into is teams aren't willing to do both. They're not willing to give up that draft capital and foot the whole bill for Julio.
So this is what it comes down to. I think just about every team would be willing to separate themselves with a second round pick and pay him $15 million if it's a prime Julio Jones. If it's the 2015, 2018, like top three, top five, like at worst top five receivers in the NFL, I think just to, you know, I would say Raiders do it right away, right? I think most teams would be like, okay, that's if they can swing it cap wise, I think they'd afford it.
If it was like 4 years ago.
Yeah. It comes down to what percentage of Julio Jones in 2021 is that of his prime, right? Is he 80% as good as he was in his prime? Is he half as good as he was in his prime? That to me is the number, right? A second round pick, $50 million for a prime 100% Julio Jones, do it. Yeah. 80%, maybe 70%. I don't know. Hell, even like a six, because like you said, he's all reports are is a guy that doesn't get in trouble.
He's so much better than everyone else, though. It's like even a 60% Julio, fuck.
And that, well, and that's the other part, right? Is our wide receiver core is easily the worst group positionally on our team outside of DBs, right?
Well, that's why I said last week the two groups that I'm looking to improve is the DBs and
wide receivers and DBs, right? Our best receiver, like on paper, John Brown, probably.
Will Sneed, John Brown. I mean, as far as most accomplished,
most accomplished.
As far as receivers goes, I mean, there's always Waller, but you know, right? We're talking receivers, yeah.
But I think this is why, and we haven't heard a lot from Gruden or Mayock on Julio Jones. Obviously, they haven't made a move yet, and I think it comes down to this: like as bad as our wide receiver course, and not that we don't have good targets, right? Obviously, our Darren Waller and Kenyon Drake's gonna be big, and Josh Jacobs keeps saying he wants to be a target again, et cetera, et cetera. But pure wide receivers, WR1, WR2, WR3, weak for us.
Yeah,
I think that Mayock and Gruden are still firm believers that Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards will develop. I think that they're firm believers in that. Which is why John Brown, 1 year deal, Willie Snead, 1 year deal. That's what they didn't go after. Like we talked about it, how like this is the greatest time. If you're in need for a receiver this last offseason, it was the best time ever. There was like half a dozen guys went in the first round. Great wide receivers went early. A ton of wide receivers were available in free agency. Raiders just got, okay, let's get Brown and Snead. Like nothing, no game changers, nothing changing. I think in their minds, like, all right, let's just get bridge guys because we're confident that Ruggs and Edwards are going to be stars and that Hunter Renfrow will continue to be, you know, a solid slot receiver that's going to complement this offense really well. And I think that's why the Raiders aren't going to move on Julio Jones. Is they're still so committed on their first and third round pick from two drafts ago.
This is the issue facing the Raiders. It's going to be the issue facing the Raiders for a few years to come. Gruden has so much stability in his job that he doesn't have that I need to win now attitude, right?
Yeah.
So we're having to wait and see what happens with these draft picks. And look, are you Nostradamus out there?
Which is a good thing though, right? I mean, that's
not
a
necessarily.
Good, it's a good.
Not necessarily.
Would you rather him like constantly be fighting to be like 9-8 and 10-7 and not fireable or chasing a Super Bowl?
I want him to chase a Super Bowl. He's not chasing a Super Bowl right now.
He absolutely is.
Oh my God, dude.
He absolutely. What is he? I'm not saying he's doing it always correctly or always doing it right.
Look,
but he's clearly not just trying to tread water to not be fired.
He knows he's not going to be fired, so he's not treading water just to be fired. Mm-hmm. He's taking an absorbent amount of time to get where he wants to go. He's already pivoted twice. Okay, let me build this offensive line. Nah, it didn't work. Let me tear this offensive line down and do something else with this money. If he wanted to win now, if he was under pressure, he would not have brought Gunther back for that third year, knowing how bad that fucking defense was, knowing how much worse they played their second year in that defense as opposed to the first year. They were ranked 24 in that first year. In 2018? Yeah, dude, not good, man. Not good at all.
I don't know if John Gruden taking too long to fire Gunther was his like, I'm under no pressure and more just like he believed in his buddy and he just like wants his buddies around, which is the problem.
That's
a different problem.
And this is what I'm talking about with a lot of these Raider fans out here. who are just like, oh, well, yeah, they're going to be great. Don't worry. Yeah, this guy's going to be this. This guy's going to be that. Well, when it doesn't happen, then they just forget about it. If you have a chance to get a star player, okay, and like, and here's my reservation over Julio Jones. What makes Julio Jones great, and this is the argument against it, I hear and I've read a lot of things about, oh, we got Jerry Rice late in his career and he still ended up balling out. Mm-hmm. Number one, you're talking about the best receiver to ever play the game.
Yeah.
Who never used the tools that Julio uses to get open. He used crisp route running and timing to get open. Okay.
Yeah.
There was a pretty funny video of Ocho Cinco and Deion Sanders lining up again. They were having a conversation and they started lining up against each other. And like, cause they're both alphas and like, oh yeah, I would take you this way. I would take you that way. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, you ain't beating me deep, Cinco. You ain't beating me deep, this and that. And then Chad Ocho Cinco said something that was really smart. He said, football is not about a straight line. It's not about running fast in a straight line. It's about faking, about making someone believe something, moving, timing, being able to be sudden. Mm-hmm. And that's why Jerry Rice was able to perform as well as he did so late in his career. I'm not saying that Julio Jones can't do it. What I'm saying is what I've seen from Julio Jones is that his winning of passes is more his overall athletic ability. He's such a supreme athlete, and that deteriorates over time faster than being a crisp route runner.
So that's when you're athletically dependent, that can go quicker than like a Jerry Rice. Yeah.
But
also Jerry Rice was like the hardest worker like in the history of football.
He was perfect always in hands.
Like he had the perfect resume to be
to have that long
longevity. Right.
Yeah. But here's the thing. But I want to get back to what I was talking about. We need to make sure that we're looking at what we have, not looking at what we can have. What do we have on our team right now? Oh, well, yeah, Rhodes is this and that. Okay, well, he didn't perform that way. Well, Edwards is this and that. I'm a big Edwards fan. He's this and that. Well, he didn't perform that way.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason why I'm not so fast to shit on the offensive line is because we've seen those pieces perform.
Yeah.
Okay. But the receivers have huge, huge question marks. And if you can relieve some of those question marks, the better. The more, the better.
Okay. But that all comes down to my original question. What percentage of Julio Jones's prime is that? Right? We have to how good does Julio Jones have to be to make that price tag work? Cause I'm with you. I think the Raiders organization did a good job of addressing that, right? John Brown, Willie Snead, I think are like the cheap, perfect bridge type of receivers, right? They're not coming into all right, this guy's clearly the wide receiver number one. We're gonna give him $50 million every year. They're like, no. It, like, just in case Ruggs and Edwards don't pan out, just in case Renfro's kind of already peaked, these are guys that can get us through next season, and then we can reassess from there. Coming in with a really expensive $15 million a year, trading away a high draft pick for sure wide receiver one is a different situation, right? And again, I'm not against it. Like, I was super down to get a sick-ass wide receiver one that was available. At what cost, right? I'd rather have Yannick Ngakoue, obviously, right? Because our passing game is a lot stronger than our pass rush. I just don't know what Julio Jones we're going to get. And so to make that kind of move, to trade that kind of draft capital and pay that kind of money with a wide receiver core that's, not great, but the ceiling is super high, right? The basement's low with our receiving core, but the ceiling's through the roof with multiple players. It's like, We're good this year, right? Like our wide receiver core to see where we can go. I'm happy with this year. I'd love a prime Julio Jones. I'd love a prime any of these guys, but I don't know. I don't think we need to throw a bowling ball into the group of pins that is our wide receiver right now.
I mean, it's just a little bit of a different philosophy than we have then. I mean, I'm looking at, look, if I'm going to take a chance on something, I'm going to take a chance on a proven commodity. Mm. And I'm not saying this up and down the roster, but when you talk about somebody like Julio Jones' stature, that's the type of guy you take a chance on, because you never heard of him being out of shape. You never heard of him coming in and not working hard. He had an injury. He had a year where he was injured. One year where he was injured. Okay. And for all accounts, he takes good care of his body. But I mean, so it's just a difference of philosophy. You want, because you're taking a chance on these kids anyway. You're taking a chance with these kids. I mean, I think Bryan Edwards can be a pretty good player, but we don't know. We don't know that for sure.
And Julio Jones is the big X receiver we're lacking, right? We got a ton of little speedy guys. We don't have any big wide receivers other than Edwards, right? Waller can basically be that guy. Right?
Waller was lined up at the X a bunch of times because there was nobody else.
He's essentially just a huge X that blocks well, right? Like that's
terrible. You line up on the line. You line up on the line every now and then.
Yeah, you can put him in the backfield. You can put the guy anywhere, right? It's Darren Imagine like, Waller.
You have Julio, Waller, Edwards, Moreau on like goal line. That's pretty decent.
I forgot which game it was, but the Chiefs ran this awesome play where they had like all their tight ends lined out wide, and then they just ran deep. It was like to end the second quarter, and they're like on like a 50-yard line or something, and they just threw a little dink to Tyreek Hill, and all their receivers and tight ends just blocked all the DBs that were way down the field in like prevent defense. Tyreek Hill just ran right in. I'm like, dude, imagine, yeah, Julio Jones, Foster Moreau, Darren Waller, like being those guys, and then just giving it to Ruggs, like a little slant or something, saying, all right, you got three huge bodies in front of you, nothing but DBs, and looking at the asses of your best blockers. See what you can do.
Make it work.
I don't know. I flip-flopped on this in the last 5 minutes talking with you because I went into this thinking like, okay, I'm not convinced Julio Jones is enough of who he was to make that kind of sacrifice, but he is exactly what we need offensively.
Right? And you're not going to find anything better. You're not going to find anyone with a better pedigree than Julio Jones. At 32 years old, he's not old. Guys, he's not old. He had one injury season. 32 is not old. If you're a running back, 32 is old. Mm-hmm. Wide receiver, if that caliber, 32 is not old.
So you would give up a second rounder, pay him $50 million a year?
I mean, I'm not saying exactly that. No one else is willing to do that. But, I mean, there could be something that that can be worked out if we can figure out the contract a little bit. Yeah, I'd be willing to do that. That's a big hit, but, I mean, we'll figure something out. Yeah, I mean, Mark Davis fucked over people out of $750 million. I mean, I'm sure he can make 15 work.
Anyone who wants to make fun of Mark Davis, like, oh, just some goober and, like, a weird haircut. It's like, dude. He took $750 million from the city of Las Vegas and Sheldon Adelson, like a bajillionaire and a city. He was able to swoop in for $750 million money for his own stadium and team to move.
He laughed and straightened his bowl cut.
Come on. That is as baller of a move as has ever been done on a football field. Pulling that off.
Thug.
The Davis father-son tandem don't get enough credit for like their business dealings. You know the story of how Al Davis like just swindled the Raiders from his partners? Yeah. He had two partners, and he basically just swindled them out of it. Mark Davis swindled $750 million.
Yeah, one of the guys in the windbags said that, he was a customer of ours. They're like, you never mentioned the Raiders or Al Davis in front of him.
Yep.
He was still bitter Bertha about it.
So you're going to hate this next segment.
Because I already saw it. I already hear it.
Yeah, you're going to be really, really triggered here because how much you hate Derek Carr.
No,
so this is really going to bother you. Like when the facts hit you, you're going to be really, really pissed. So Nick Shook, NFL writer, got into the next gen stats for deep passers. Okay. So any pass over 20 yards is considered a deep pass. And he did the next gen stats, right? Which is a couple things. He looked up completion percentage over expectation, CPOE, completion percentage over expectations. Because we hear all the time, Derek Carr can't throw it deep. Derek Carr can't throw it deep. He's a dink and dunker. He's a terrible deep throw passer. Well, he graded the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL last season who are the best deep ball throwers based on multiple things, specifically completion percentage over expectations, which represents the difference between a passer's expected completion percentage determined by evaluating a number of factors, including pressure, time to throw, distance of attempt, separation between target receiver, nearest defender, and actual completion percentage. On that list, some, guys you'd expect. Number 10, Josh Allen. Number 9, Justin Herbert. Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, Aaron Rodgers, number four. Number one, weirdly, is Daniel Jones. I guess it's a great deep ball. Number two, the second best deep ball thrower in the NFL. Your quarterback, Derek Carr. 24 of 52 for 968 yards, a 10-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio, 124.2 passer rating on passes thrown 20 yards or more. He is a brilliant deep ball thrower. And the other part of this, the reason why he's ranked so high is because of the CPOE. Things like pressure, receivers, and how close the defenders are. He's so high on this because not only is he getting these throwing these great deep balls and being productive with his deep ball, but he's doing it when wide receivers are basically covered and he's hitting them perfectly. He's doing it under pressure because his offensive line was injury shambles and COVID shambles last season. He's doing all this production under the worst case scenario, which is why he's graded the second best deep ball thrower in the NFL. So the floor is now yours, Soto, for you to explain to me how he's still a terrible deep ball thrower.
Well, you see one thing here. First off.
Okay. First off, let's hear it.
Pick aside, as far as the offensive line goes, was the offensive line serviceable? Then we have starters from last year that stepped up. Are they that? Or
I've been very consistent with it. They were a little bit above average. But they were way overpaid.
So you're saying the players that ended up,
they were in injury shambles because they never were able to work together as a cohesive unit.
Let's be
unit.
Specific about what we're doing here, okay? His offensive line was fine. If you say his offensive line was in shambles, if you want to talk about on paper,
injury shambles, production-wise, above
average. What does that have to fucking do with how they protect him? Nothing. Because they did just fine last year. So let's just move on from that. Number two, my issue with Derek Carr wasn't the fact that he couldn't throw the deep ball, is that he wouldn't throw the deep ball. And you take a look at this list, Daniel Jones, 39 attempts, and he was hurt for a few games as well. Mm. Derek Carr, 52 attempts. Kyler Murray, 58 attempts. The most impressive one is Aaron Rodgers, 74 attempts, and he's still that high on the list, okay? Mm. Deshaun Watson, 54 attempts. See, you know, higher in the list, you get the lower attempts.
But they're all about the same. And I noticed you stopped at Baker Mayfield, who was 47
attempts. Yeah.
47. Okay, you take out Aaron Rodgers because he's Aaron, the NFL then MVP.
56
right?
for Kirk Cousins.
And he's right around the same number. He's like slightly below. He's 60, like, the average is like, the average is like 55, and he threw 52.
67 for Russell Wilson, so one more a game. 61 for Justin Herbert as a rookie. Josh Allen, 64. So these guys are
slightly below average.
Okay, if you want to take it over a 16 game season, mm-hmm. these guys are throwing one more deep ball per game.
That's nothing. That's like
it is not. It's not nothing. Okay, fine.
There's like 60 offensive plays a game, and they throw one more deep pass. And also, don't forget, like, and again, it's like a red zone issue, right? Are we bad in the red zone because of John Gruden's play call, because Derek Carr struggles there, because other players struggle there? They're all kind of sharing the blame a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say, right? Now, we can argue who's more to blame than others, but we can all agree John Gruden has really conservative play calling, right? Like, we can all agree, like, run first, ask questions later. You know what I mean? Like, and this is the other part, other part of the equation is Derek Carr was throwing it deep when the defense knew he was throwing deep. That's the only time John Gruden wanted to throw deep. It was one of those Hail Marys late in games, or, you know, it's 3rd and 17. And still Derek Carr was successful. And again, go back to the offensive line. Derek Carr sucks under pressure. He freaks out under pressure. He led the NFL with 11 completions, 426 yards, and 6 touchdowns on deep passes against the Blitz. He's improved. Like, all the criticism that Derek Carr gets, 95% of it, the stats say it's not his fault. The stats say, no, he's actually good at those things you're criticizing him at. And this is two of them. He can't throw it deep. Yeah, he can. He sucks under pressure. Not anymore, or at least not last season. He's getting better on his feet. Again, the same problems with Derek Carr are still there, and there's only really two of them. Fumbles a lot, which is a giant dagger, and red zone issues, which is We don't
know a giant dagger.
A giant dagger. It's also partly Gruden, partly Carr, partly the rest of the team. Like there's other factors there, right? So again, just all like I'm down to criticize Derek Carr when he deserves it. Certainly, like the Atlanta game last season, other parts late in the season, of part of the collapse. Plenty of blame needs to go to Derek Carr. Certainly the fumbling, certainly partially the red zone issue. But I just can't stand the, oh, he's a bad teammate. Oh, he can't throw deep. Oh, he sucks under pressure. No, he doesn't. No, he does not. And here's yet another example of it. All right. Another guy who's done a lot of work on studying Derek Carr. A guy that we haven't had before, but we've wanted to for a while. We finally got him. Sanjeet. You've heard him on a fantastic YouTube channel. I highly recommend you check out. And he's going to join us next right here on the Autumn Windbags. Joining us now, you can check out his fantastic YouTube channel. Hardest working guy in Raiders YouTube. Sanjeet T joins us now. Daily YouTube videos cranking it out. You never get bored following you. How you doing, Sanjeet? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys, both of you guys, for having me. I really, really appreciate it. RJ reached out to me on YouTube. On Twitter, and you made it happen. So a huge shout out to you, and I really appreciate being here with you guys.
Yeah, you were on vacation when I hit you up, and so I thought, yeah, he snubbed us, you know, big time on us, no big deal. But no, not the case at all. You turned the phone off as you should, and now we're here. Glad to have you. Yes. So like the biggest story, I feels like every single time there's a skill player that's a big name that hits the open market. All of NFL
or potentially
media
hits the open
potentially
market.
Hits the open market. All of NFL media assumes the Raiders are in on it, right? Whether it's Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and now Julio Jones, everyone just assumes that John Gruden, the mad offensive scientist, wants to just like throw as many pieces of the puzzle in there as possible. What do you make of Julio Jones? Is he going to be a free agent? Do you think he's going to go somewhere? Do you think he'll go to the Raiders?
Yeah. So Julio Jones will definitely not be on the Falcons this upcoming year. Right. The Falcons, one, need cap space. Julio, two, is not happy. He's pretty much been a loser most of his career with the Falcons, minus that 1 year they went to the Super Bowl. The Raiders getting Julio, I think other teams probably have a higher chance. I don't know if Julio Jones thinks the Raiders are a winning organization.
Yeah.
Truth be told, I wonder, like, you know, do you think outside players on other teams even follow the Raiders, right? I'm going to assume they don't, right? I'm going to assume Julio's really invested in the Falcons. In that division specifically. But if Julio does come to the Raiders, I think it takes our offense to a whole nother level. If you look at our issues last year, and I know people say we don't have issues on the offense of the ball because we ranked 10th in points per game. But if you guys break it down statistically versus just things like division games versus non-division games, those rankings change. We're not as good against non-divisional opponents. You know, we're better against teams we play twice a year, every year. And I think Julio Jones fixes a lot of those issues. Ultimately, do the Raiders get Julio Jones? What do you guys think?
I don't think so personally. I think that I don't know that Gruden is in that win now mentality. I think he still has that kind of manana attitude where you're like, yeah, let's see how these guys come to, you know, turn out. And that's what I was saying earlier today. Also, I don't feel like they have enough cap space and enough players that they want or they're willing to part with right now because it's in such a rebuild, especially on the defensive end, to be able to create that cap space. And even if they do some finagling with the cap or with Julio's contract, I don't know if they're going to be able to make that fit or they'll be super tight to be able to make that fit. I didn't want that flexibility to come in later in the year.
I went into this show and before you came on, Sanji, I came in thinking, all right, I don't want to make the commitment. I don't want to make the investment. But after talking with Soto for 20 minutes, I'm like, now I'm kind of open to it. Like, obviously, our receiving core is the worst core of our offense, right? I mean,
absolutely.
The potential is through the roof, right? The ceiling for Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards, they could be amazing, right? Hunter Renfrow, he could keep improving, or they could all be busts. That's certainly possible, right? They didn't show us anything really last season that they were going to be anything, that. They're guaranteed to be superstars for us moving forward. Julio Jones is like exactly what we need, right? A giant X receiver, proven commodity. You know, he's basically a wide receiver, Darren Waller, which, you know, putting those two guys as targets for Derek Carr is chef's kiss, right? But it all came down to like, are you willing to pay someone roughly $15 million a year, give up a second round pick for what version of Julio Jones? If he's prime Julio Jones,
no brainer.
Do it. No brainer, right? Is he 75% Julio Jones? Maybe. Do that. Is he 50%? Like that's the thing. 32 years old, coming off injury. What version of Julio Jones would we get?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I've heard some scouts say. Julio Jones has taken a step back. He is not the player he was 2 or 3 years ago. Plus, the Falcons throw the ball a ton, right? So Falcons are going to get Julio Jones his targets, his receptions, his yards. Is he going to have that same impact with the Raiders, right? He'll have maybe a fifth less targets with the Raiders. So will he have that same impact? Who knows, right? I do think a first is too steep for Julio Jones. Even a second, right? You can get some good players in the second round.
Same.
But then at the same time, like, who do you – like, there's no corner – maybe there's two corners in all of football that can one-on-one cover Julio Jones. Yeah. Even if Julio Jones is taking a step back, most players cannot cover Julio Jones one-on-one. Mm-hmm. So when you consider the fact that he has to get bracketed in order to guard Julio, well, then who do you use to bracket Darren Waller, or do you now need to keep a safety over the top when Henry Ruggs goes deep? At the same time, Hunter Renfrow is very good on third and four, third and five. Yeah. So there's just so much that I feel like Julio can bring to this offense. And people always talk about, well, let's fix our defense first. But at this point, I think we've made all the investments we need to on the defensive side of the ball. There's really no one we can go out and get to improve the defense. At this point, we're just waiting for that defense to take that next step.
Yeah. That's the thing with our – that's what's so frustrating about our defense is – every single position is either filled by a first round pick or an expensive free agent, right? Every single position, basically, right? Yep. Except Max Crosby on end, and he's our best player on defense, right? It's like every position, it's like we're not going to move on from Corey Littleton. He's too expensive, right? Yannick Ngakoue, hopefully he'll pan out. And then all our DBs are like all first rounders. So it's like, are we going to give up on Jonathan Abram this early? Probably not. Are we going to give up on Damon Arnett this early? Probably not. And that's what the Raiders did, right? Brought back Carl Joseph, drafted two safeties. It's like there's so much depth there where it's not like, all right, we're going to bring a player in to replace somebody, and that's our fix. Essentially, the fix is Gus Bradley going to wash away all the sins of Paul Gunther from last season? That's the fix. It's not really a personnel thing at this point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Spot on, man. At this point, it's not the players, right? Last season, it was the coaching staff. I think we have good individual players, right? You look at some of the things Abram's done in the past. You look at some of the things Mullen has done, some of the things Corey Littleton was a potential Pro Bowl type of player.
Superstar, but the superstar linebacker.
Exactly. And why is it that he came to the Raiders and Paul Gunther pretty much ruined him, right, last season? Same with LaMarcus Joyner. I think Joyner he showed some flashes last year, right, at times. But ultimately, he was too expensive as well. So, like, we had to get rid of him. But I do think Gus Bradley is going to fix a lot of the issues. I think Gus Bradley has proven it, right? He was with the Seahawks, and he went to the Seahawks, and he built a defense,
he built
right?
It, yeah.
It's like Paul Gunther never built the defense. Paul Gunther inherited the Bengals, and he kind of just managed it after Mike Zimmer left. At the same time, Gus Bradley's done it three separate times with three separate defenses just in the last 15 years. So I have all the confidence that Gus Bradley gets it done.
Yeah, I was saying the art of Gus Bradley is going to be to not only put these individual players in positions that they can succeed, but mold that into a defensive scheme. And we all know what he's going to run defensively, but it's what little wrinkles are you going to put for these individual players? How are you going to make Abram more of a linebacker than a safety? How are you going to, use flex guys like Diablo and Kuntz? How are you going to use these guys to be able to maximize without endangering the rest of the defense? So, yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Where are you on the other side of the ball, the offensive line? So when the Raiders dismantled it, essentially, at some, Gabe Jackson, Rodney Hudson, Trent Brown, the NFL media was like, oh, they're punting on the season. They're giving up on their strength. And I'm thinking to myself, like, we saved $35 million. It's got rid of $35 million, right? Trent Brown played half the games. Gabe Jackson way overpaid. Rodney Hudson hurt. That one.
That was a bummer.
That sucked. That sucked losing Rodney. But then you look over and you're like, all right, Colton Miller on the left. Like, he's set, guard were set. Andre James at center, we've been told, has been the guy to be. And when he played for a game and a half or so, he played fantastic. And then a first rounder at right tackle. Are you? I think there's safe questions about the offensive line, but worried about it? I think that's too strong. Where are you?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, man. I think people made a much bigger deal than needed to be. I totally understand the Rodney Hudson. That's like the only one. That's the only position, in my opinion, we actually downgraded that. And that's only because Rodney Hudson is a potential Hall of Famer, right? You can say he'll definitely have a shot at the Hall of Fame. And you're going in with an undrafted guy, right? A guy that no one's really seen play. I mean, we've seen him play. I think he fumbled two or three snaps the one game he actually played. Two games. One game he started. The other game before that he played as well when Rodney Hudson got hurt. But I love Andre James, man. I've been saying it since Andre James's rookie season. I remember putting videos out of Andre James saying, I think this guy's going to be the starter. In fact, when the Raiders re-signed Rodney Hudson last year, they extended Rodney Hudson last year, I was actually disappointed. I told myself, I think we're making a mistake. You know, we let John Feliciano walk. John Feliciano
hurt, man.
He's a good football player. You know, we let him walk. I was saying we need to get rid of Gabe Jackson and just let Feliciano start because we saved cap, right? We saved money. And then we signed Rodney Hudson, and I said, we're making a mistake again, man. Like, he's a great football player, but he's getting up there in age. But I will say this. Rodney Hudson got his ass kicked by Quinnen Williams. And Quinnen Williams is a great football player, right? But Rodney Hudson 3 years ago would not have allowed that to happen. Rodney Hudson was, in my opinion, coming on the downward slope of his career. Outside of that Rodney Hudson to Andre James transition, I think Denzel Good's better than Gabe Jackson. I don't know if you guys agree with that. I don't know what you guys' general thoughts on Denzel Good is, but I think Gabe Jackson was I think he was overhyped a little bit, right? Raider Nation always said, oh, Gabe Jackson's a top four guard, which I disagree. I don't think – maybe one or two seasons in the past he was, but I don't think he was that anymore. Trent Brown played in four games, right? Like, that was we had to do that. We had to move on from Brown. We had to save cap from the offensive line. That was just a necessary cut. Have either of you two watched Andre James, or do you guys in general think Denzel Good is a downgrade or an upgrade from Gabe Jackson?
I have watched Andre James, and in the game that he started, he had the exact same responsibility as Rodney Hudson. So they expected him to play just like Rodney Hudson. He didn't blow any line calls. Okay, he didn't get beat on any blitzes or any twists, none of that stuff. So any of the stuff that you would see a young center getting fooled on, he passed every single test as far as that goes, and he made all the same calls that Rodney Hudson made. So that's why I'm super confident as far as that goes. As far as Denzel Good, I see Denzel Good as a more athletic, just as tough Gabe Jackson. I think Gabe Jackson was susceptible to a double move. And sometimes with a little bit of a stunt in the offense, he had to reach a little, defensive line stunts. He had to reach a little bit, and that's where he got into trouble. And, you know, maybe Rodney Hudson had to come over and slide and help. And, you know, you see every time that happens and someone slides over to help, there's a gap somewhere else. So maybe it wouldn't have been necessarily Gabe Jackson's guy that made the play, but his play shifted the lines where it had to be, you know, it made some issues for the offensive play. So I have no problems with Good at all. And RJ and I just had a conversation right now where he's trying to hype up Derek Carr as this and that. And I'm like, hey, you're saying this offensive line was in shambles last year. They had pretty good players on the line last year.
It was an injury shambles, but they still played together pretty well with what they mixed and matched. Like, I'm with Soto basically. Like, the down part of losing Gabe Jackson is Denzel Good is just a fantastic swing lineman. Like, you plug him in anywhere, no problem. Left side, right side, guard, tackle. Like, that's where he was so good. It's like, literally, he's the best guy, best backup for every position. We don't have that anymore. Hoping, you know, John Simpson, Brandon Parker, hopefully these guys, like, can be these reliable backups. Because if we learn anything about the Raiders offensive line is these guys get hurt all the time. And so, again, if I'm confident in our line. I think there's safe questions to ask. Depth, though, is the issue. Like, we had so much good depth last season that even though everyone got COVID and got hurt, we still played above average and pretty well. Not as well as the highest paid line in football should play, but still pretty well. Is that depth still there? That, to me, is the big question.
Yeah, the depth is going to be an issue. I'm confident that the starting five from left tackle to right tackle, I'm confident that in total we'll have 8 games missed between all those guys at a minimum. right? Maybe it's Richie gets hurt. Maybe Colton misses two games because of an ankle injury. Maybe Andre James has to come out. Whatever it may be, they're going to miss games. And I don't know, is John Simpson ready to start at left guard or right guard? Brandon Parker, is he ready to play right tackle? Who knows, right? Those are going to be the biggest issues. And I agree with you. Denzel Good could play left tackle, left guard, right guard. Denzel Good plays every single position. Any position we needed him to play last year, he was able to do it. And we don't have that anymore. We don't have a guy like Good as a backup because now Good's the starting right guard.
And if there's one coach that's earned the right to say, just throw guys my way and I'll make it work, it's been Tom
Cable, man.
Like he's proven like, all right, maybe, you know, give me my pieces and I will make it work. And he did it. Like last year's the best example of that.
So what, I mean, you have Denzel Good. He can play guard or tackle. You have Alex Leatherwood, who has played guard and tackle at a high level. You have Nick Martin, who's played center and guard. So you still have some flexibility there. As long as two of those guys don't get hurt, you still have some flexibility to have a decent lineup up there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Nick Martin could be a backup guard, right? Not only can he be the backup center, but he could also be a backup guard. I think if Alex Leatherwood were to get hurt or something were to happen, I think Denzel Good could switch right there to right tackle. And I think we do have some guards that can step in. I've noticed that John Simpson was primarily practicing the left guard spot, which I think he played left guard all of last year as well. So I don't know if they would consider him a swing guard, right? I don't know if he'd ever come in at right guard. Mm-hmm. But I do like some of our backup guards. Jimmy Morrissey, our backup rookie center that we took. I love Jimmy Morrissey. I watched his tape at Pitt, and, you know, I see things that I saw in Andre James when he was a rookie in Jimmy Morrissey. So I'm really excited to watch him specifically in preseason.
This is like such an open-ended question, but it's such a weirdly controversial one with Raiders fans. Where are you on Derek Carr? Because Soto hates him, wants him gone.
God damn it.
He wants to trade everybody away to get Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers. I love him. I think he's not the best quarterback in the NFL, but I think he gets all this hate for things that aren't his fault. Like, oh, he doesn't win. Yeah, the defense has been atrocious. He's terrible under pressure. No, he's gotten a lot better. Like he led the NFL in completions, deep passes on, you know, against the blitz. Like there's all these like criticisms that he gets that I don't think are fair.
Yeah. So I've been very critical of Derek Carr. If, you know, there's a community of Raiders content creators on YouTube. I brought people on my channel. I've been on other people's channels. And Derek Carr always gets, it always gets brought up and I'm always on one side of the argument. And the other side of the argument is people love him. And I like Derek a ton, but I don't love Derek Carr. And here's why.
Bingo.
I think Derek Carr is a great quarterback in the sense that we can win with him. He's arguably a top 10 quarterback, right? And he probably is a top 10, but for sure he's like a top 12 quarterback. But I think Derek Carr's biggest flaw is the one flaw you cannot get over, especially once you get into the playoffs. And that is when you pressure Derek Carr, when you start hitting Derek Carr, he panics. He panics a little bit more than he needs to. I made a third down video where I talked about the Raiders. I actually went through every single third down against the Miami Dolphins. We're 0-for-10 on third downs against the Dolphins. One of the things that was happening was they were pressuring Derek Carr, and it wasn't like they were blitzing Carr. They were getting pressure with four guys. And then they bring guys and put them on the line of scrimmage, like safeties, and then they drop them back. And Derek kind of seemed lost at times. I do think Derek's biggest issue is under pressure. And then outside of under pressure, he doesn't make those plays that you want with the legs. And I'm not talking about takeoff running. More so than if you have pressure coming from one end, step up in the pocket, take three steps to your right, and make the throw. Mm-hmm. I don't see that from him. I see him check the ball down as soon as his first or second read is not there. And those are things that I think ultimately, especially when you get into the playoffs, you can't overcome those, right? The Raiders last year, think about this. We finished 8-8. We're 4-2 in the division last year, which means outside the division, we're 4-6. But if you don't consider the first 2 weeks, right, the 2 weeks Panthers and Saints game, you have zero film on a basically a brand new team. You have no film. So those two games, you can kind of put those to the side because if you guys watch the Panthers throughout the season, they got much better, right? They had a whole new coaching scheme, new system. if we play the Panthers the last game of the season, would we have beat the Panthers? I don't know, right? Same with the Saints. If we played the Saints towards the end of the year, would we have beat the Saints? If you don't consider those two games, we were 2-6 in the division or non-division opponents, right? I love Carr, but I do think he struggles sometimes against non-divisional opponents. And as you guys know, in the playoffs, we don't play divisional opponents for the most part. We'll be playing non-divisional opponents. Ultimately, I do think the Raiders right now don't have an issue at quarterback as much as the defensive side of the ball, right? Another thing is I think the Raiders need to get better weapons, receivers specifically. I think Derek Carr's had his most success with guys like Cooper and Crabtree, right? Bigger wide receivers that could actually make plays. Ruggs and Hunter Renfrow, they're not beating guys at the point of attack, right? Like right off the line of scrimmage, they're not beating guys, right? They need they need time to develop their routes. And we're a quick passing game. So I don't really know what John Gruden's doing there. I do think John Gruden needs to figure something out and get a true number one wide receiver, right? Like I think Amari Cooper would have been a great player to keep around. I think at this point, he would have been such a huge help for Derek.
You stumbled on, you brought up something that's I've been thinking about, but you vocalized it pretty well, is how like you keep hearing every offseason, even midseason, how much Gruden is hell-bent on beating the Chiefs, beating the Chargers. I need my own Tyreek Hill. I need safeties and linebackers that can cover, you know, we have a rule on this show. We don't mention the name of the tight end from Kansas City, right? To cover that tight end in Kansas City.
The guy that was on the dating show, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. You know who I'm talking about. And so he's so hell-bent on just beating this specific squad that sometimes he puts the blinders on and the non-division games become a lot harder because you uniquely game-planned, not just game-planned, but built your whole roster just to beat certain guys. And I get it, right? You play them twice. We're in one of the best divisions in football, right? Like the Broncos are one decent quarterback away from being really good. Justin Herbert, I'm sorry to say it. It's going to be a stud, good, right? Like yep. AFC West is only going to get tougher. So I get why he's doing it, but you're up a good point how you're so focused on those three teams in those six games that the rest of them kind of like he almost like forgets about it. Like when he wants to scheme on somebody, he does really well. Like when we played the Bears after trading Khalil Mack, like Khalil Mack was deathly quiet. Why? Because Gruden was hell bent on making sure Khalil Mack didn't beat him. But the rest of the season went to shit because he was just focusing on his little pet projects.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. John Gruden wants to build like the Chiefs, right? In the sense that he wants his own Tyreek Hill. At the same time, he wants to be able to build to stop the Chiefs. The Chiefs are one team, man. Most teams are not built like the Chiefs. Now, I will say this. If you can build an offense like the Chiefs, right? If you can get Tyreek Hill, which technically we should have with Henry Ruggs, we have Darren Waller. Technically, we should be able to match that production. Yeah. But then the Chiefs also have other quick wide receivers, right? They have, you know, they get guys in the seventh round that run 4.2, right? And we don't have a lot of that. And at the same time, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. And you can't, you're not going to build like the Chiefs unless you have Patrick Mahomes yourself. Derek Carr is not Patrick Mahomes. Ultimately, if we could build like the Chiefs, great, right? But we're not the Chiefs. We don't have what the Chiefs have. That's a great point. I never thought about it that specific way that John Gruden kind of has his blinders on in that aspect. But I will say this, right? I think by the end of this year, we'll have a bigger picture of what our true issues are. You know, if Gus Bradley gets us a top 17 defense we're not in the
if playoffs. If we're an average defense, dude, yeah. we're trouble. We're trouble. Yeah. Like, you know, the Sanjeet, like not just the Raiders have had a bad defense, like historically terrible, like absolutely. In the record books, bad. Yep. And still we were 500 this last season, you know, like 7-9 before that. Like that's insane that with that bad of a defense, it's been like respectable, like semi-decent, respectable seasons. If we're an average right in 2016, when we were, you know, 12-3 before Derek Carr got hurt, he was talking about him being the NFL MVP. There was talk of that. We were potentially like could have been a 2 seed. We were only the 20th best defense in football, not even average, still below average. And still we went 12-4 before, you know, and then lost Derek Carr. Like an average, if Gus probably give us an average defense. Oh my God. I'm doing backflips in my hallway for the rest of the season.
Yeah. No, another thing is we need turnovers. All right. You can have points. You can allow 20, you can be the 25th team in points per game. Mm-hmm. Turnovers is the difference, right? We were, I think, 20th in 2016, but we're like number seven in turnovers.
Yeah.
Turnovers is key. How many turnovers did we have last year? Like seven or eight, like in total?
And like, they were like gifts. Like something just falling into Eric Harris's arms, like that he didn't even have to work for. Like they were gifts.
Yeah. So like, I think that's going to be a big thing is we need to force turnovers. I think Gus Bradley's going to be the guy, man. I think his system, the way he draws it up works. I think he's a good coach. He's well respected. Honestly, the shitty part is he's only going to be here for 2 to 3 years and then he's going to get a head coach job somewhere. Right. If he has success. Man.
If he gets the Raiders to, like you said, a 17 ish around there, people are going to be knocking down his door.
He deserves a statue in his honor. If he can get the Raiders like a better than an average defense, that's the thing that like, people just don't grasp of how bad the defense has been, what this team's capable of. If it's just average, like again, 20th ranked defense and we were 12-4 that season, you know, I mean, and that's what I said before when like the defensive coordinator search was going on, like right after Paul Gunther got fired in those last couple of games, I was like, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I want to be the defensive coordinator for the Raiders because all you can do is go up. Like the defense has been so terrible. If you're just decent, if you're below average, just regular below average, instead of travesty in hell below average, that's a massive improvement. And then that's going to get people paying attention. It's like, oh, you pulled the Raiders out of the depths of hell defensively to something maybe respectable. Like that's superhero shit. There should be parades for you in Vegas.
Yeah. Well, so here's another thing though, right? Is like in my opinion, going into the offseason after last season, I was saying this, that we need to cut some of the more expensive offensive linemen, specifically Trent Brown and Gabe Jackson, and we need to replace those guys. And we need to use that money and invest it on the defensive side of the ball. We didn't invest a lot on the defense, right? Just Yannick Ngakoue, I think, is the only guy we really signed. I guess Solomon Thomas. And then we brought guys back like Kendall Vickers, I guess, Quentin Jefferson's another guy we brought in, but then we drafted a ton of guys. But my point is we got cheaper on the offensive line. So is Derek going to get pressured more now? Is he going to get hit more? And what happens when that happens, right? When Derek Carr gets pressured more, what's going to happen? Is our offense going to take a step back? Are we going to go from the 10th best offense in points per game? Are we going to become like the 17th or 18th best now because Derek Carr has been pressured more? Those are going to be the questions that are going to get answered this year.
Yeah, you know, I don't hate Derek Carr as much as RG wants to like put that narrative out there.
You want him dead. You want his whole house world to burn down and all
that's
his worldly possessions.
That's not nice. I never said any of that.
Yes.
No. What I am saying is I have two issues with Derek Carr. Is he is way too risk averse.
Yep.
And that shows up. That shows up on third downs and it shows up in the red zone. Okay. And he is not good at making plays outside of the offense. Yep. And when you, and just like you said about getting pressure, you have to make plays outside of the offense. He locks in on his primary receiver a little bit too long. And that doesn't give him the chance to go to a secondary receiver. So it's main receiver, drop down, main receiver, check down. And those are the issues that I have with Derek Carr. RG wanted to shove in my face, oh, well, he's, you know, number two in the league against and throws over 20 yards, and he had like the second fewest in the NFL. It's like, well, he doesn't throw the ball deep enough. He needs to be able to push the ball down the field more, number one. He's too risk averse, and it's like you don't lead the league by almost double in sub 30-yard field goals if you're good in the red zone. It just doesn't happen. Those are like, what, 30 yards and less, like what, the 11, 12-yard line?
Isn't that more Gruden though than Carr?
RJ, come on, man! Like,
isn't that more Gruden than Carr?
When are you going to give it? Where are you going to put the onus on Carr, man? Like, we have to demand more from everybody.
All the time, I do.
All the time.
We haven't even brought up my biggest criticism of him, Mr. Fumble Ruski. Drops that ball all the time. That's my biggest criticism.
Okay, look, he doesn't fumble nearly as much as he shits the bed in the red zone. Number one, even if he throws interceptions half the time, that's still 7 points over six if you kick two field goals. Throw the fucking ball. And you have one of the best big receiving targets in the NFL, and you don't get him the ball. That's my shit right there. And if you want to say that if he's good enough for you, then you go ahead and find and you go ahead and root for a good enough team. I don't want to root for a good enough team. I want to root for a great team. That's what I want. And that's why I get pissed off.
Derek Carr should overrule John Gruden's play calls. Oh, God. It's the play call.
Is John Gruden throwing the ball in the red zone?
Benji, where are you on this?
You see where I'm going crazy?
Talk some sense into Soto, please.
You see where I'm going crazy?
He's going to have a heart attack.
So I agree with Juan, 100%. 100%. I'm sorry, RJ.
Don't be sorry.
Oh, Juan's 100% right, man. You know, I'll go back to that Dolphins tape because I just did a film breakdown on it like 2 or 3 days ago. But Derek Carr, man, he does lock on. And people blame John Gruden. Like, anyone that wants to defend Derek Carr puts the blame on John Gruden. John Gruden has had multiple top 10 offenses in the NFL, right? John Gruden has proven that his offense works. It's not his offense that's holding anything back, right? His offense designs a play, draws a play up, and Derek Carr has to make that play. Derek Carr has to throw the ball. But at the same time, if the play's not there, then Derek Carr needs to step to his right or to his left and make the throw. I can show you like 7 plays, and I was going to do a video on it, but then I decided not to because anytime I do videos like that of Derek Carr, I tend to get a lot of dislikes and unsubscribers and stuff like that. But I can show you like 7 or 8 things there.
Well, you'll have Soto jerking off to it on his God laptop. It. So you've
I
got,
get
you
so
got,
much hate,
you got that other side
get,
to it.
I get so much hate. I get crushed.
Yeah.
No, I can show you guys at least 7 plays in which Derek Carr gets pressured and he throws the ugliest. Like, he'll just throw the ball up. There was a play against the Dolphins, I think, on second down where a guy came and hit Derek and, like, he stepped out of it and there was no pressure. But instead, he just threw it up and he threw it directly to one of the Dolphins' defensive guys who did not expect it and he dropped it. But it would have been an interception. There was another play against the Cleveland Browns where he got pressured by Myles Garrett. He stepped up and he straight threw it directly to Ronnie Harrison Jr., who dropped the pick 6. And I have a ton of plays like that. And it all comes back from the fact that he gets pressured, right? And I don't know how you feel, Juan or RJ. Do you guys think – I know RJ, I guess, would probably say no. But, Juan, do you think Marcus Mariota would be a better option than Derek Carr?
I think Marcus Mariota has his faults as well. I think that he would give plays a bigger chance of succeeding when he gets pressure, like you're saying. I think he would, his ability to not only run, but the defense knows his ability to run will break down the secondary a little bit sooner and give him the ability to make more plays. So that's where his strength lies, is whereas Derek, if everything works out well on the play and the play runs the way it's run, you have Derek, you know, you have, excuse me, John Gruden designing the play. And I'll say it up front, as predictable as John Gruden is with his play calling and with his sets and with his formations, it still works, right? Yep. So if everything works out well, that's when Derek Carr shines. But like you said, when you go against non-divisional opponents or you go into the better defenses in the playoffs, it's not going to work out like that. It's not going to work out as well. So that's when someone who has more of the traits of a Mariota is going to come through. Don't get me wrong. That ugly late fourth quarter interception that Mariota threw against the Chargers, that's the trade-off that you get. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's, if you could put them both together and take the best qualities, you have a superstar quarterback, but unfortunately they're two separate people.
Yeah, Marcus Mariota would be quarterback for the Raiders for about 6 games before John Gruden killed him in his sleep. You know why? John Gruden wants a Derek Carr, wants like a robot that just like do this, bam, 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 follow my game plan, execute it perfectly. Marcus Mariota, who wants to like make stuff up as he goes, wants to scramble like crazily. I know John Gruden says like he wants that in his quarterback. I don't think he does. I don't think he wants to be a guy that just like decides to run or plays backyard football. Like that would drive John Gruden through the wall. I thought like, you know, earlier in the offseason when there was talk of like Russell Wilson wanted to, you know, moved and get traded to the Raiders, John Gruden would pull out all of his hair with him as his quarterback because he's just constantly ad-libbing and doing what he wants. That's not like John Gruden hates that. He wants a computer with an arm, and that's not Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, that's a good point. So one of the things that people always bring up with Marcus Mariota is that play against the Chargers in which he threw the interception. People don't consider this, but I think Zay Jones, after that game, or maybe in that week after that game, said it was his fault as to why it was an interception. Zay Jones was running a route in which he has the ability to make an adjustment. He can keep running or he can stop. He stopped, and Marcus Mariota thought he was going to keep running. Those type of things get fixed when you have 4 years in the system, right? Like Derek's going into his 4th year in the same system. Marcus Mariota I don't even think he was healthy in the beginning of the year. Didn't he have COVID or some sort of
injury? He didn't practice with the team until week 5.
He got signed with a lot of injuries that the Raiders didn't know about. So he sat a long time.
Yeah, so like, you know, people always say, oh, well, Marcus Mariota didn't do good or whatever. I think Marcus Mariota had a great game against the Chargers.
So did man. I.
You look at how many – like, I think his first pass of the game, he literally stepped up in the pocket, ran to his left, and then threw it to – I don't know if it was – I think it was Foster Moreau for, like, a 17-yard gain. But he made an off-script play, right? Derek Carr would not have made that play. Derek Carr would have checked it off to Jalen Richard. I'm not saying Marcus Mariota's a better passer of the football than Derek Carr, because Derek Carr is a great passer of the football. But I think for John Gruden's offense, I think Marcus Mariota – if he had 3 or 4 years, the same way Derek Carr has already had, I think Marcus Mariota can execute the offense perfectly fine. As many times as Marcus Mariota would make a mistake, right? Rather it's, you know, he tries doing too much and he fumbles or whatever it is, that many times he'll also actually score a touchdown in the red zone, right? He'll take off running or he'll give Darren Waller the opportunity. The Dolphins game, which is the third time I'm bringing it up, but just because I just did the film study, we're 0 for 10 on third downs in that play. Three of those 10 third downs, we had Darren Waller one-on-one on the left side of the field, and we had three guys on the opposite side. So Darren Waller was single covered, and Carr did not throw it his way even once. He didn't even look that way, not even once. You can't blame John Gruden for that, right? That's on Derek Carr. John Gruden can design a play, but Derek Carr has to actually throw that pass. I say all that having no issues with Derek Carr as a starter this year. I think if the defense gets fixed, then Derek Carr will, if he did what he did last year, I think we're in the playoffs.
One thing Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota share very much, and that they're both like, their teammates love them and they're great leaders. And that showed in OTAs this season, where it was like 84 of the 89 players on the Raiders were at OTAs, which was awesome. We had, with Richie Incognito talking about it after OTAs, like, yeah, we officially voted that we weren't going to do OTAs, but then we said we're going to, right? And this is a great example of like the leader, the core leadership group that's still on the Raiders, and the fact that they know that it's all these young guys, all these brand new guys, a lot of young guys are going to have very big responsibilities, right? Right tackle, free safety, et cetera. And how these guys are all just going to come together. How much do you get out of OTAs? Because I'm already like getting super hyped about it, right? We're not even like regular like training camp yet. I'm like, oh yeah, everyone's at OTAs. Kids, you know, buy your ticket to the Super Bowl. We're going, right? How much can you realistically get out of an OTA?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things to consider. First and foremost, Gus Bradley's implementing a brand new scheme, brand new system. The secondary coaches, the linebacker coaches, all these guys are coming in. So from that perspective, it's very important, right? They're going to get a new playbook. And I'm sure all the guys already have the playbooks, but you know, when you have questions, when you're installing that defense, the run fits, all that good stuff, you can ask at OTAs, right? You can set it up however you want and you can ask those questions. So from that perspective, I think it's great, right? You can learn all those things. You can ask all the good questions. At the same time, I think it's very important that Casey Hayward comes in and Jonathan Abram and Trayvon Mullen and Damon Arnett get to know him, meet him, and say, hey, let's go for lunch. Let's go hang out. Let's get to know each other at a deeper level, because those are the guys that come onto the football field and they're having fun. Right? They're competing, but they're like with their brothers out there. And I think that goes a long way, right? If you're so comfortable with the players around you, you're going to perform better, right? Consider all those things. At the same time, I think it was Max Crosby that made the comment that week one came around and I didn't even know who the defensive tackle was. I had never met him because we weren't able to have OTAs or, you know, training camp and all that good stuff, right? Like coming week one, I didn't feel comfortable with the guy next to me. Like that could be a huge disadvantage to any player. I think OTAs is very, very important. And I think for like the GM, for the John Gruden specifically as well, we saw David Irving not be brought back. And I don't know if David Irving was ever at OTAs. Someone told me he did show up to day one of OTAs and he was out of shape. That and a couple other issues was the reason why he ended up getting cut. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I do think the coaches also get to see Jonathan Abram come in and say, hey, we told you to bulk up to 220. Where are you at weight-wise? PJ Hall, where are you weight-wise? And if you're not there, you're going to cut him. right? I think that's important from that perspective. You can see what the guys are doing, how they were training, and all that good stuff.
Damon Arnett, that guy looked freaking huge now. He put on some weight.
Was it 15 or 25?
Like 15 clean pounds, man. Like, he looks like the same ab-wise, but he looks a little bit thicker up top.
Yeah, man, you can tell he's talking to the really buff guys in those NFL weight rooms. Like, hey, how'd you get so big? I've got a couple tricks. I've got a special serum that might help you out. As long as it's on my team, baby, that's all I care about. Make sure you check this guy out on YouTube, Sanjeet T, hardest working guy on YouTube when it comes to working for the or covering the Raiders. Sanjeet, this was awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate both you guys. So thank you.
All right, thank you so much, Sanjeet. That was great. Good stuff from him. Yeah. So let's get to this. Let's get to the juicy part of the NFL news cycle. Is that way? Let's get into some dirt. Let's get some TMZ shit. You know what I mean? Stuff. Yeah, like the good stuff that like really really sells tabloids.
Tickles your plums.
So Lynn Bowden Jr. We remember we drafted him last draft.
Third round pick.
Didn't even make it through training camp before we traded him away to the Dolphins. And everyone looked at that as like, all right, John Gruden looked at like a joker player that he thought would, you know, we turn this like quarterback into a running back and how be able to do this all this awesome, cool stuff, this different stuff. And they got him and they're like, all right, he's definitely not going to be able to do that. And there was rumors too of how he was kind of like a bad influence on the younger players, like flashing like, oh, he's more worried about like what, like the paint job on his new ride as opposed to like being there in practice, stuff like that, right? So golongtd.com did a profile on Lynn Bowden, and in that he blamed the Raiders for looking at him in a negative light that wasn't his fault. Remember, he got arrested at his grandmother's house back in Ohio. No charges filed against him. They just basically raided the place and he was there. And during that interview, Bowden said that he called the special teams coach of the Raiders, talked about it, and overheard the coaches in the background saying, oh, this kind of shows what a terrible guy he is. We got to get rid of him. So a little bit of he said, she said here, Soto. Could have been the Raiders leaking that info to kind of validate their choice of moving on. This could be Bowden either exaggerating what happened or making it up what happened to try to make the Raiders look bad. Either way, he's not a Raider, but what do you make of the whole, one thing's for sure, drafting him was an absolute failure, regardless of whose fault it was.
I mean, I'm unclear on this. It was the phone call in question or the Zoom call in question prior to the draft or after he was drafted?
I think it was after he was drafted.
So that makes a big difference as to how I feel about what's going on.
Because if it was before the draft, then
they drafted you anyway.
Still went, yeah.
And still drafted you. Look, ultimately, there were multiple reports, and these are not just Raiders reports, but multiple reports by people in the know that Lynn Bowden just didn't want to be there. Now, if that was because of what happened pre-draft or post-draft. If he had a sour taste in his mouth because of how the coaching staff was speaking of him, then he showed it on the field and he showed it during practice. And they're all right, this guy's just not going to want to be here. And he's, you know, he's showing us he's not going to want to be here. And then they let him go. So I think it's being made up. I think that it's unfortunate that people make these blanket, you know, judgments on people and like just paint, you know, people with a broad stroke. Not everyone comes from a background where everyone in their family is a, you know, upstanding citizen. Sometimes people come from a little rougher backgrounds and the people that they hang out with, the people that are closest to, don't always do the right thing. So I think to be able to paint him with that same brush because he's visiting family and then just happens to get raided at that time, I think it's a little bit unfair.
It's a formula with a million factors in it, right? Like if you're Ray Lewis, we'll look the other way with some of the stuff that happened in your past, right? If you can produce at, you know, Hall of Fame level as a linebacker, like, all right, all of a sudden, you know, stabbing a guy out of a nightclub, we'll look past that, right? If you're Lynn Bowden Jr., allegedly, if you're Lynn Bowden Jr. and you're not really as fast as they thought you were, you're not really as shifty as they thought you were, we think maybe you're kind of like a bad influence on the rest of the young guys and with the wrong attitude, And hey, he was arrested at his grandma's house. What kind of background? It's like all those pieces kind of add together. And that's what I think turns people, you know, can turn teams away. Like, it's very, unless it's like Aaron Hernandez type stuff. Like, it's rarely like one big thing and you're like, okay, we're done with him forever. Right. Like, it's got, yeah. like you see guys with like domestic violence issues, they get second chances. You know what I mean? Like those, mm-hmm. you know, so if you're good enough, that you'll always get a second chance in the NFL minus like a killing spree, right?
Or beating a chick up like Ray Rice.
Even then, like, I think he – did he come back for a little bit? Didn't Ray Rice eventually make a comeback? No?
I don't think so.
Anyway, none of them – you know, Lynn Bowen Jr. wasn't any of those guys. And so, you know, I guess as Raider fans, what we can take away from this is another example of, I think, Gruden and Mayock drafting who they want a guy to be as opposed to drafting who he is, right? And and Mayock brought it up this offseason multiple times. Like, we got to get better at not trying to put square pegs in round holes and being like, all right. Yeah, because that was Paul Gunther, right? It's like, hey, you're my Mike linebacker. You're going to do this. Well, but my skills are this. I don't care. This is what you're doing, right?
This is my scheme, yeah.
So the good thing is, I guess the positive sign that I got from this whole Lynn Bowen situation and with this extra news we got coming out now, the Raiders seem to start to be a little bit more self-aware, right? They're like, okay, we've made these mistakes with the guys that we've drafted. We're aware of the problem. Can we do better?
Because the thing, I mean, it's like those levels of awareness, right? There's those the entry level of awareness is you have no clue. Even when you mess up and people point it out, you still have no clue what you did wrong.
Yeah.
Then you identify it after it's pointed out. You identify it as it's happening, and then you correct it as it's happening. That's like the highest level, right? Mm-hmm. The thing is, it's like the thing that got me so, and this is why I'm so critical of some of the picks and the placement of the players with this Raiders regime is they jump on both sides of the fence, kind of like you with Derek Carr. It's always one thing when it's whatever is to
the
your
grass
favorite.
Is green on both sides of the fence.
Like, whatever fits your narrative, that's what you're going to jump onto, right? Whereas, okay, we didn't draft Josh Allen or Devin White because Cleveland Farrell was a better fit to our scheme, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, but then you drafted Arnett, who wasn't a fit to your defensive scheme because you like the player. It's like, okay, well, you have to be consistent in how you pick these players.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is something that, like you said, you're picking a player because this is going to be our X or this is going to be our Y. This is going to be our this guy. Well, no, that was just a player that someone picked up that they just happened to do something well. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're known for now. But yeah, it was a head scratching pick. Another line. I mean, just get them and line them up with these head scratching picks.
Another thing that you brought up on you love your Bleacher Report lists. Top five sleeper teams for 2021.
Yeah.
And I guess do they describe like exactly what sleeper is? Because it's the list. And then they basically just pick the over on their win totals, right? So it's basically like their top five, like bet the over on win totals.
Yeah, these are the best bets to go over mm-hmm. as far as the Vegas odds for wins. So number five is the Bears. They're saying go over 7.5, so 7.5 wins to go over on the Bears. Number four is the Raiders, over 7 wins. So what is that, like an 8-9 or something like that? Or
yeah.
8-9
So 7-10, the Raiders going 7-10
over 7. So it'd be 8.
It has to be 8-9. Like a losing. Do the Raiders have a losing record next season? Is basically the question here, right? A losing record still gets you in, right? Can the Raiders go 8-9 or better next season? Like, well, we ran through the schedule when the schedule came out, right? We're playing the NFC East. Thank God. Our travel schedule ain't as bad as normal. Like the Raiders' travel schedule is always going to be.
Hey, man, look. The defense for Washington is on par with the defense for Miami. And Fitzpatrick fucking killed us last year when he came in the game. Fitzpatrick won that fucking game, dude.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's their guy there now. So, and Dak is back in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Who knows what's going on with that defense over there? Jesus Christ. But the Giants have Saquon Barkley back. It's not going to be as easy as you might think. And, you know, of course, the Eagles have a young Mike Vick out there playing quarterback. Juan from fucking West Covina. I'm going to say that every single time we talk about the Eagles. Well, okay, so going down the list, the Cardinals over 8 wins, so at least a 9-8 record. The Giants over 7, who we play. We play the Bears and the Giants and the Steelers this year, which Steelers are the next one, over 8.5 wins. So three of these teams are teams that we're playing, out of division. But these are three teams that we're playing, and that goes to what, you know, something that Sanjit said, that we're not very good against teams out of our division.
Seven. I feel like I think the media coverage of the Raiders is so outside looking in, right? Like, oh my God, they torpedoed their offensive line. Like, it's still pretty good. Like, that's not that bad of an issue. Oh, they totally wasted money on Kenyon Drake. Yeah, but that's something that's a problem in the offseason. When the season rolls around, I'm gonna be happy we got Drake back there, right? Like, you forget about what guys cost when you know he's catching touchdown passes or, you know, running sweeps and getting us 30 yards.
Like, look, I love Josh Jacobs, man. I love Josh Jacobs. But if what happens the first 2 years to Josh Jacobs happens again, and he gets hurt and he misses some time, and Drake goes in there and he plays the way he played, running the ball with the Cardinals, he may not get that job back, man.
Yeah,
and he may be a casualty where, hey, you know what? I can pay this guy a whole lot less than I pay this kid moving forward. So, I mean, okay. So the next list, kind of in line with the sleeper picks, was the top teams with playoff pressure. So the teams that have the most pressure to make the playoffs. And interestingly enough, number 5 is the Cardinals, who were number 3 on the list for sleeper teams.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4, the Bears, who were number 5 on the sleepers team.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, and we're hearing, is Vic Fangio. What are you doing over there, man?
Yeah.
Broncos at number 3. I mean, I guess it makes sense, right? I mean, they built a pretty nice roster other than quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then now they pretty much pivot from the guy that was their guy, Drew Lock. And now you get Teddy B over there. I mean, I guess it makes sense. Number 2, your Las Vegas Raiders. Who were number 4 on the top 5 sleeper teams. And the number 1 team with playoff pressure this year are the Giants, who was number 2.
That's a weird one.
You know what, man? I think what they're thinking is they have so much belief in Danny Dimes that he's going to be able to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they get, what, it was like number 10 pick or something like that. When he was drafted above a couple other quarterbacks. And they're saying, okay, this is the year. If not, then we're going to have to overhaul it and start over again, because it's not going to happen with this team. But, I mean, as far as playoff pressure goes, you have to be very clear on what we say about that. I think the head coaches and on 4 of those 5 teams are the ones that are on the hot seat. I think that with the Raiders, the hot seat's going to be either Mayock and or Carr, as opposed to it being John Gruden, because he has what?
It'll be Mayock. Whatever problems the Raiders face next season, it doesn't matter what it is. Offense, defense,
I don't know. I don't
quarterback play, linebacker play, schematically. I'm not saying that the blame deserves to go to Mayock. I'm saying the blame will go to Mayock, because Gruden is Teflon in Las Vegas in the Raiders organization. The axe will fall down on Mike Mayock, whether he deserves it or not.
And maybe Derek Carr. If he pulls a 2017 after 2016, the way he did the, next year, if he pulls a 17 in 2021, I mean, it could be him. It could be him too. Not just Mayock. It could be him too. And he could, and, you know, Gruden can make it work. He can talk and, I gave him a shot. I tried to make it work. It just didn't work. And we have to move on, and I wish him well, and blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, the fuck do I know, right?
Well, I know you want the offense to fall apart next season so you can get rid of Derek Carr. But
God, I don't want my team to lose.
Yeah, you do. You ready to do some what up win bags?
Yeah, why not?
A win bag. Rick Grimes two Z's. Rick Grimes is, you're going to love this one. Get your dick out, Soto. Carr is bad. Ruggs would have been so much better had he had a quarterback that could actually hit him in stride. Carr is 46 and 63 after 7 years. I have seen enough. I want Mariota or trade for Rodgers and get Julio Jones. Trade the next 3 years first round picks for Rodgers and Jones and go play for a Super Bowl for the next five. Deal. See, this is what I'm talking about. I'm down for Carr criticism as long as it's accurate.
Yeah.
Bringing up Carr's record over the last 7 years, again, historically terrible defenses. What, four offensive coordinators during his time in the NFL? Four, I believe.
I get what you're saying, but there has to be some responsibility put on Carr. And I take a look at the 16 and 17 seasons. 2016, the team was 12-4, okay? The team scored 416 points. That's 26 points per game, seventh in the NFL. The points against were 385, so 24.1 points per game. That's 20th in the NFL, okay? The following season, the defense actually got better. They were still ranked 20th, but they only gave up 23.3 points a game. The offense went from 26 points a game to 18.8 points a game. Now,
the defense points per game got better, but their ranking dropped. The entire
who cares about the ranking, dude? It's about
how
many
you're playing. Because that's exactly who you're going against.
And they were 20th the same. They were 20th both years.
Yeah, so the same. Not good.
But they went 6-10 that year. And the one thing you can really look at is look at the huge drop in points per game offensively.
And then Carr is one of several factors for that, right? I mean, you're telling me new offensive coordinator has no effect. Come on. It has to a little bit.
I didn't say it has no effect. I'm not going to make that the first thing that I point to.
Jeff Garrison. Ruggs is going to be explosive. He's going to be a huge part of this offense. He's going to set a team record for most explosive plays in a season. Hopefully it's this.
I can see that.
You think so? I mean,
look, what we forget, I don't want to get stuck in this recency bias, okay? Because I think you and I and the dearly departed Rory were super pumped about getting Ruggs because of the fact that he caught the short passes and he made them into huge plays.
Yeah.
Right? Hayden Winks said it last week.
Slant screens,
yeah. Bubble screens. Like this is the kind of guy that you want if you have a short pass offense. And although Tyreek Hill does make a lot of big plays down the field, he also makes a lot of plays crossing the middle of the field and a lot of screen plays. He also makes a lot of plays as far as that goes as well. So I can see it totally because have we had a player like Ruggs before? I don't think so.
I mean, we've drafted our fair share of just like really fast guys.
Again, like Ocho Cinco said, football's not in a straight line. And you can have, you know, we've had receivers like a Tim Brown, who I had an argument with a 49er fan that we both know. And he's like, oh, Jerry Rice, this Jerry Rice. I'm like, look, if you put Tim Brown with all those Hall of Fame quarterbacks that Jerry Rice had, he'd have just as good stats.
I don't know if I'm gonna dive all over that well and completely agree with you. I mean, Jerry Rice is the best football player in history, position regardless of position. Like, did
it
he
make a big difference who you have throwing you the ball?
But did all those Hall of Fame quarterbacks become Hall of Fame quarterbacks just purely on their own, or did Jerry Rice make them Hall of Fame quarterbacks? Or did all those Hall of Fame quarterbacks make Jerry Rice? Right? Like it's like a kitchen and the egg thing.
You still have to hit him in stride, man. You still have to hit him in the hands to be able to have him catch it. You can't just be, you know, throwing him into the seats Rick Meyer style.
Jeff said a lot of other stuff, but that was the good stuff.
The main thing.
Kay Kessner. Wonder how Yannick and Jefferson not showing up went over. He's talking about the OTAs and talking about Yannick Ngakoue and Quentin Jefferson, two new guys on the defense. So my big thing about OTAs is like, it's always good when everyone shows up. Always great, right? Like, you want your leaders there to be leaders by example. You obviously want your young guys there because they're the ones that have to learn the most. It's the middle guys that maybe it's even like the older quality players that aren't true leaders. They're the ones that need to be there the least. They all would benefit from being there, but it's the older non-leaders where you're like, these are the guys that need the least work out of OTAs. Mm-hmm. Josh Jacobs didn't show up. Look, he's going to be the starter. He gets hurt every season. It's almost better for him to rest than to actually be there. Although he should be there. You've got a new guy in the backfield with you, with Drake. Like, you guys got to figure out how that's going to work. You got to get used to each other, et cetera. Yannick Ngakoue and Quentin Jefferson, it's a new defensive scheme, so I wish they were there. But these are veteran dudes that don't have to relearn football. Mm-hmm. So
here's the
deal. I'm sure Gus Bradley wishes they were there. The team would obviously be better if they're there. But if I had to pick, like, the top 10 guys where I'm least worried about them going to OTAs, Yannick and Jefferson would probably be on that list.
Yeah, look, Yannick has played in Gus Bradley's system, and so has Quentin Jefferson with Seattle. Mm-hmm. They know the system. So as far as that, not knowing the system, a new system, it's not new to them.
Yeah.
It's new to the Raiders, but it's not new to them specifically. So they know what they're doing, number one. Plus, you know, they're veterans. They've played in the system, and others like it before. They know what to do, okay? If they're taking this time, I'm sure they're not sitting back, you know, drinking pina coladas with their feet up. I'm sure they're out there working with their own people to get them in shape for the
year. I hope so.
I'm sure they are.
I'm not gonna assume that they're just like doing deadlifts right now as we talk. Like, if I was the off season, I was a rich and famous millionaire, I'd have a tequila in one hand and a stripper in the other. I'm also not in the NFL.
So. And a stripper in the other.
And a stripper in the other.
Well, you know, I don't have any issues with that. I think it was.
Well, look, I want them to be knows. There. It's not good that they're not there, but it's. Not
I don't think
like,
it's good or bad. I don't
it's,
think
it's but good it's or not bad. like Derek Carr. You want there as a leader, like Alex Leatherwood. You want there, right? Brandon rookie. Like, you want rookies to be there, right? You want the leaders to be there. These are the guys where it's like, I want you to be there, but it's the least harmful.
Basically. Yeah, it's not harmful. I don't think it's harmful because they're going to go out there and they're going to play well.
Yeah.
They know the system. Gus Bradley's going
to
put them.
It's not like Malcolm Kuntz is there and it's like, well, if Yannick doesn't have to be there, I don't have to be there. You know what I mean? Like,
Kuntz has no tape.
Like, yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it's causing like players to be disgruntled in the locker room.
But also, you have to look at it from this perspective too. Yannick and Jefferson not there, it gets another guy to a position to slide in and show what he has.
Yeah,
you know, pick up the system, maybe get a little bit more familiarity with the coaches, maybe get a little bit more reps during training camp. I mean, you never know.
Take advantage of it instead of bitching about it, you know? Yeah. Good question, though. Very good question, Kestner. All right, that's it for us. Until next week, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you, Sanjeet, for joining us, and thank you for listening in. We really, really appreciate it. And to keep this train a-moving, do us a favor. Like, comment, subscribe on all the social media platforms. Make sure to leave a comment, please, on whatever podcast platform you're listening on, check out the YouTube, all those wonderful things. And until next time, later.